Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. The Mr. Warren Hayes Show Dynamite Review. I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. How's everybody doing? Today on Thursday, it is April what? April 25th. I'm keeping track of things. Glad to see you here. Glad to have you. And it is a distinct pleasure to be able to review this Dynamite for you, the Mr. Warren Hayes Show audience that shows up on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on the audience's favorite application for listening to podcasts. That was unnecessarily wordy. Whether you're listening to this on any side of the spectrum of podcast consuming, consider leaving a like on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. Subscribe while you're at it. And also 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, 5-star ratings on Spotify. It would help out tremendously. And do help out tremendously, and shows a little appreciation for your boy here too. I'm like, that's pretty neat. We're doing the AEW Dynamite review from April 24, 2024. That's a lot of fours. And might as well just get to it. I mean, there's talking points, of course. There's stuff that, look, you want a spoiler for this review? Yeah, I thought, as per usual, you know, I record this on the Thursday. I record this on Thursday and then release it. So it's always the day after. But here's, you know, if you want an overall, like, paintbrush of how I felt about it, here's how it goes. I had a lot of fun with last night's Dynamite. I thought it was an easy breezy watch, established a bunch of things. It is, of course, a newsworthy edition of Dynamite, which we'll get into, but you know, it's a Dynamite that had that started off a bunch of things, kicked off a lot of elements. Might not have been like my usual cup of tea, where I really like having a lot of great wrestling. You know, the great wrestling was not not there last night. Fine. We'll get to it, but this wasn't the centerpiece of what Dynamite was yesterday. There was wrestling, but a lot of angles, a lot of things being kicked off for this pay-per-view cycle, which is exciting to me. Well, exciting might not be the right word, which I consider to be a high positive, because you know, a lot of people like to think that, let me say that again, because I want to include myself in this. A lot of us sometimes feel that, you know, pay-per-view builds in AEW are sort of, there's a couple of things that are focused on, and then you sort of slapdash the rest, right? Now we've got, if all of what was started last night is guiding us towards Double or Nothing, well, we have some matches set up. We have some angles set up. There's a lot of things that have been set up just on one show that will likely drive us into Double or Nothing. I'm assuming, of course, in a lot of circumstances, there's some things that are clear, but there are things that you're like, oh, okay, well, we're probably going to go down this path, right? And maybe not even go down this path. Maybe there's things that are just going to be, you know, TV feuds, which is fine too, which is something I think we need more of, by the way. And when I say more, I don't mean like suddenly taking over the entire, you know, but you know what I mean? Like a nice little TV feud, not big enough to be on the pay-per-view, but interesting enough to keep us excited for, the weekly shows, to see how it turns out. And it gets paid off on TV, like it gets paid off on Dynamite or on Collision. You know, it's like, I like that kind of thing tremendously as well. So, there again, there's a lot of stuff that happened, a lot of stuff we're going to get into, but I think we're off to the races in the most positive sense. There's a lot of, I felt AEW delivered a lot of things last night with confidence, and that's good. And that's something that you want to see. It's something that you want from any promotion, really, not just AEW. You want, you know, things to be executed in a way where they're, you know, yes, we've got both hands on the wheel and we know where we're going. That's how I felt after last night's Dynamite, which happened in Jacksonville, Florida, in Daly's Place. Back to the roots. 2,215 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix. The last time they were here was just in January 10. 3,183 tickets at that moment. So that's a substantial drop. It might not be the... Again, by the time I'm recording this, you know, maybe WrestleTix will have got some final numbers, so on and so forth. But that is a 900, right, seat drop in attendance. I mean, the woes continue. This is not good, especially if you're in what is ostensibly your home base, right? This is how Daly's Place is recognized within AEW. Like, it's home. And you go to Jacksonville and this is what you get. 900 drop. That's significant, don't get me wrong. And then, of course, yesterday, maybe you've avoided the news in this regard, but and you didn't see it go by, but if you haven't, here I am. Right? There was some controversy yesterday over a report filed, a report regarding seat fillers for last night's AEW. And this is news coming from an actual news outfit, Action News Jax, Jacksonville, right? Reporter Ben Brecker reported that they had obtained an internal City of Jacksonville email from the Military Affairs and Veterans Department saying that they are looking for 50 people per night. We're talking about Dynamite and Collision. 50 people per night to attend as fillers. The communication from Tiffany Morales, a Veterans Outreach Manager, states, I have just been told that AEW will be having two shows in Jacksonville this week, one tonight and one on Saturday. I am looking for 50 people per night to attend as fillers. Now, you know, I don't know why this, and this turns into a major thing, a major discussion point yesterday, where a lot of us who have been observing this for a while and who have something more than the memory of a goldfish, go just raised our hands and sort of shrugged and went, oh, what's the big deal? And I don't, you know, the report was also framed in the idea that, you know, oh, the internet darling, the once beloved AEW, is now resorting to seat fillers, which is something they've done in the past, very, very recently, which is something that WWE has done in the past, multiple occasions. And, you know, as far as I can remember, like you remember day one, and I mean the day one, there was a video that was leaked about rules for seat fillers. Like, it's not that big a deal. And AEW stuff has been appearing on seat filler websites, because there are websites for this in major towns. You know, if you're a seat filler, you can find work find the shows to go to. There are entire websites that exist to promote the fact that they're adding seat fillers, and they're saying seat fillers. But because being a seat filler in entertainment is a legitimate thing, right? I'm sure you've all heard about seat fillers at award ceremonies like the Oscars and the Grammys and all that stuff. I think the term seat filler in this circumstance might not be exactly what AEW was looking for, because they were reaching out to vets. They're reaching out to army people in the armed forces, who probably don't know exactly what seat filling is, and you know, whatever the fuck. The point being is that they're reaching out to the members of the armed forces to come sit down and enjoy the show, ultimately. And I don't see what the issue is where you know, companies, many corporations reach out to people in the armed forces to partake in their product, in their entertainment, in their sporting events, their entertainment events, whatever the fuck. It happens frequently. And for fuck's sake, WWE does a show specifically aimed at the armed forces, like done on bases. Like, what are we even doing here? What is this about? Now, this all ties in to this this perception that's coming forth right now, that you know, WWE PR is going extremely hard to discredit and devalue AEW in the eyes of the media, of the public, right? This all stemming from Joe Lanza, Voices of Wrestling, who's done some audio bits in that regard, regarding this situation, talking about it, exposing some examples. It's caused somewhat of, it's created some turbulence within the online community. I myself, you know, related but also unrelated, but I think, you know, it rides parallel to what Joe was talking about. I wrote an article on Voices of Wrestling last week about how the space for criticism in wrestling is diminishing, and it's shrinking every day. If you haven't read it yet, go check it out, or check the community tab on YouTube. The link is there, or you know, you'll be able to find it. Y'all are smart. So, you know, I don't want to get into a whole thing here regarding WWE PR and the media, because we're here to talk about AEW Dynamite. But I think this specific example here goes beyond, you know, reaching out to wrestling media itself, or wrestling content creators, or you know, influencers. This is an actual real deal publication. Like, this is an actual a media outfit for the city of Jacksonville that's reporting that AEW is using seat fillers, and for some reason this is the death of AEW. You know, that long extended prophecy continues here. So this is a very clear example of WWE PR doing the work, right? Why would anyone reach out to the city to get information about this, you know, about AEW looking to get some vets in, if it if they weren't pointed in that direction, if you know what I mean? Or if it wasn't curved in a certain way, right? You know, I'll leave it at this for now, but WWE PR is doing a tremendous job at making AEW look like fools. I think the discussion over the past, since Dynasty, has been ridiculous. Not that it wasn't before, but the PR businesses that WWE is in is bullish. It's the kind of thing that you expect from a multi-billion dollar corporation. But at the same time, what it does is that it feeds all this subclass of grifters who are preying upon AEW hate to promote, to have their own little slice of business here. It's a vicious, it's not even a circle. It's like it's not a vicious circle. They're literally feeding people whose entire business right now online is poo-pooing on AEW because that's what they do. AEW was always going to have a hard time branching out, but did anyone expect that it would be this difficult? That it would be this, that they would be under such scrutiny? That's intense, man. So look, they were asking, they were papering the show, basically asking for seat fillers or whatever. Look, no one blinked an eye that for TNA Rebellion this weekend, that right up until the day or the day before the show, they were at what, like 600 tickets sold. And then suddenly overnight, there's like 400 tickets, 500 tickets that get sold. That's not, come on now. No one blinked an eye at that papering going on in Vegas. What are we doing here? Like, what are we even doing here? Anyway. That's always something to keep an eye on, but like seat fillers, who the fuck cares? Anyway, the show opens up with some footage of the Bucks and Okada arriving earlier today. They arrive at the venue, and behind them pulls up another car, which contains scapegoat Jack. Jack Perry steps out, and they try to get into the arena. And security's like, Jack, you can't get in. You're not authorized, But then, the Bucks are like, let him go through. We gotta do a thing here. We gotta conduct some business with young Jack Perry here. So they let him in. Look, I think I'm gonna talk about it right. We're gonna start off with the angle. We're gonna do this, okay? We're gonna start off with the angle and then work our way back up. Since we're on it. A little later on during a match, there's a video of the Bucks, going into Tony Khan's office and along with Okada. I should say the Elite, right? The Elite going in with Jack Perry, and they all go in. And then later on, Alex Marvez is standing outside the office of Tony Khan, and he tries to get a word in from those involved. Jack Perry's, everyone's stonewalling him except for Matt Jackson, who says, well, Tony Khan has accepted to meet Jack Perry in the ring later this evening. Oh. I'm not going to lie. When I heard that, from that point on, I was biting my fingernails. I was taking one of these and dabbing my forehead. I'm like, oh, Lord. Oh, geez. Oh, man. What are they going to do? Oh, Nelly. What's the situation here? I was concerned at how this was going to turn out. What was going to be the content, the content of this promote, this angle, what were they going to do? Tony Khan, if you've been to an AEW live show, exactly what kind of a talker he is, right? He's enthusiastic. He loves his stuff, but he's not a charismatic public speaker. Let's put it that way. But, you know, he's very, he loves his stuff. He loves his wrestling. You can't take that away from him. So we have, <laughs> So we have this here. Where we get to the end of the show. This is after the IWGP heavyweight title match. And we have Tony Schiavone introducing Jack Perry, who just walks in. No music, like nothing, no presentation, as it should, right? Because if he's not supposed to be on location, well, why would production have his music queued up, right? So on and so on. So this makes, you know, makes sense. Perry gets on the mic. He says today has been one of the best days of his life. He's got business to handle face to face with Tony Khan. So Tony, you know, takes off the headset, leaves Gorilla, and then comes out. And of course he doesn't have any theme music either. So they stand across from each other. Perry says it's been a long road, you know, since the first Double or Nothing 5 years ago. AEW has changed the world. He says he and Tony have had ups and downs. They haven't always seen eye to eye, but he wants him to know that from the bottom of his heart, the only thing he's ever wanted is what's best for AEW. Tony approves, you know, he claps, he pumps his fist, whatever the fuck. Jack Perry then says, please shake my hand, reinstate me, and let's go on and change the world together. Tony Khan is super excited about it, gives a big old thumbs up, shakes his hand, and locks in the Tony Khan hug, right? Patented, trademarked, and they hug there. And as Perry sort of looks into the camera and gives a smile, right? He's like, and you know, look, we all knew something was up. But from that point on, now the anticipation is there. Now you're like, oh shit, okay. Is he gonna hit him? Is it like, what are we gonna do here? So then they stand next to each other, they raise each other's arms, and Perry punches TK in the gut, right in the stomach, with the mic, and he just drops on his ass. He didn't even flat back it. Tony, you're surrounded by pro wrestlers who could have taught you how to take this bump, and he lands on his ass. I'm just laughing. I'm giggling because it's just a funny visual, but it doesn't. It didn't ruin anything. I thought it was really funny. Anyway, look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm already spending too much time on it. So then the Jacksons and Okada rush in, and they're like, "What the hell are you doing?" And they check on Tony, and the Bucks start lifting him up, holding each one arm as if to give him an EVP trigger, right? But Okada's like, no, don't do that. And then he points to the turnbuckle. Do this instead. They're like, oh, good idea. And they fucking lift. They lift him up. And they do the Bucks. They lift him up into a tombstone pile driver position. And they do the Meltzer driver on it. The TK driver, I think, is what they were calling it recently. And then of course he's dead. Like Tony Khan has shed this mortal coil. Like his spirit leaves his body. He's done. Then the referee gets in and the medic hits the ring and then the Elite pose over the fallen body of, you know, Tony Khan, and Matt Jackson is like, thank you, Jacksonville. Thank you for coming out. We love you. It's been tremendous work. And then the locker room empties out, or at least, you know, the B team. They empty out to come check on TK. And Shad Khan is there too. Shad Khan. And I, at that point, my mind just went completely, it just popped. Where I'm like, because here's, this is what made the Shad Khan appearance so successful. Nobody was expecting it. Like, no one on earth was expecting to see Shad Khan on AEW television, but there we go. He's one of the richest men on planet Earth. Just sauntering in here to check on his son. And it lasted. How long was he on TV? 3 seconds? Four, five tops. Where the camera's on him. You see him and you do the meme, right? You do the meme where you're pointing at the camera at the TV. You're like, holy shit, that's Shad Khan. And then we fade to black. Like, it didn't overstay its welcome. He didn't have any opportunity to start looking awkward or acting awkward. He was sort of just staring at the refs and at the, and boom, that was it. He hit the bricks. Yeah, fade to black. And I'm sitting there this entire time and I am cackling. Like, not laughing, like not like having a good hearty guffaw. I'm cackling because it's all so great. It's so fantastically pro wrestling and well done on top of that. It's well done. This is where I stand on this. It was extremely well done. Because I guess, yeah, at the basis, no one was expecting this. No one was expecting Tony Khan to take a bump. Like, at the very least, he eats the punch to the stomach. And I'm like, oh, right? And when they start setting him up for the V-trigger, not the V-trigger, the EVP trigger. I'm looking at that and I'm like, someone's going to run in, right? Because they're taking their time. They're setting it up. The audience going, no, no, no. And I'm kind of, you know, are they really good? No, someone's going to run in. Someone's going to run in to save the boss. But no one fucking ran in to save the boss. And instead, the boss gets lifted up and into a thing and then eats the thing. Like, he eats, a spike pile driver, a spike tombstone pile driver. How could you not be in favor of this? This is tremendous stuff. And you know, look, Tony Khan probably had a blast doing it, but hopefully it's not too much of a blast where he's going to start showing up on TV and taking bumps all the time. That's, you know, maybe. maybe. I don't know how. I think the angle worked. You know, I can understand, you know, maybe some people maybe not enjoying it as much, maybe feeling a little off about it, maybe having some PTSD. Anyway, we'll give me a second. We'll talk about all of this. What I mean by PTSD. But I thought this was a successful angle. Ended the show on a high note. And here's the thing. Here's the thing that made it tremendously successful. Just as I was talking about WWE PR, you know, going hard and feeding stories and giving information to outlets, and these outlets reporting this as with, you know, without any proper sourcing, without telling us, like, a spokesperson for WWE said, you know, all that stuff. As they're going on this campaign and clearly, you know, winning, here we have AEW making the most of it out of a situation where the NFL draft starts today, and one of the executives in charge of making decisions for the NFL gets kayfabe hurt, and now it is reported on NFL.com, in The Athletic. You know, news outlets are picking this up as Tony Khan, you know, eating a Meltzer. And here's the other thing, is that Meltzer driver are now words that are appearing in legitimate mainstream sports media. It's the funniest shit. It's so funny. I think it's tremendous. Now, what what happens next? So there's that part of the media here. And of course, by the time you're listening to this, by the time this has been recorded and set out there and you're listening to this, probably we've already got the answer, right? But Tony Khan has to sell this injury, right? He has to, if he's doing any appearances for the draft, he's got to have a neck brace on, right? He's got to have, right? He can't just be like, you know, just walk around as if nothing ever happened. And everyone seems to be on board with this. I don't know what the, you know, who cares? You know, like this, it's pro wrestling, baby. And there's ways, and you know, of course, the anti crowd, the grifters, are all mad about this. Oh well, there we go. You know, I even saw some talk about by one of these said grifters that you know, oh, the minute the Booker starts putting himself into angles, you know, there we go. That's the death knell right there. And they all conveniently seem to forget the, you know, their blessed attitude era was not only had the Booker placed himself into, not only had the Booker placed himself into matches and into angles, but had placed himself as the top heel of the company. Just saying. In WCW, Eric Bischoff was actually having matches. He was actually having pro wrestling matches. It wasn't just booking himself into, and he booked himself into the NWO because the NWO was so cool and he wanted to be one of the guys. He wanted to be one of the cool guys. He didn't want to be an uncool WCW nerd. No, he wanted to be one of the cool guys, right? Anyway, I'm telling you, like these people. So, of course, this is all leading to what happens next. Now, authority figures, is this what we're doing, right? Because the Bucks were saying, you know, we're going to make this right. We're going to bring AEW back to what it was, you know, and whatever. Now, I know a lot of us are PTSD'd. A lot of some old timers like myself. Been watching pro wrestling for, you know, 30 years or whatever. Sat through WCW. We sat through, you know, multiple incarnations of WWE. Some of us even, you know, got some TNA in there as well. I can understand that we're a little trigger shy here at the idea of authority figures, bookers becoming characters, because the way it's been handled overall for not in all circumstances, you know, the rare circumstances like Mr. McMahon that really worked are rare. But between the Dixie Carters and the Vince Russos and the, you know, the authority figures, the authority, the Bad News Barrett and all this stuff, the Michael Cole GM stuff, I know they're not exactly bookers. Bear with me here. The idea of an authority figure being put on screen is not necessarily always a good thing, especially when it is the booker, is what I'm trying to say. So I know that there's a lot of us that, you know, that look back at these angles that have a history of being more unsuccessful than the opposite. And you're like, well, okay. You know, alrighty then. Hopefully this isn't going to suck, but it probably, like, you know, like I understand that we're, that a lot of us have very mixed feelings about this and we're not excited about it, right? I would like to assume that the Jacksons are a little more savvy than this. Because I feel that this angle so far has the Bucks' fingerprints all over it, right? I feel like they're in control of this creative. And of course, they're running it through with Tony Khan. And Tony Khan obviously is giving them their blessing because of what's going on. So, you know, and Tony loves this kind of stuff, right? Remember, right? This is the same guy who, you know, who loved the Brochacho stuff, who loves Timeless Tony. So, you know, I think this is the kind of the kind of angle that has just enough sports entertainment in it, but without it becoming too overbearing and then losing what's most important, which is quality of match, which is, you know, and being entertaining week after week, right? But mostly, you know, not substituting the creative for good matches. So I would assume that the Bucks are, a little more savvy than this, right? I would assume. Because what if it's just, what if it's just heels doing despicable heel shit? Yeah. Instead of running down the scenarios and saying, I don't know if Tony Khan is a good on-air authority figure, because he's not. Let's be real here. He would not be a good on-air personality, period. And I believe he's just self-aware enough to know this as well. I don't think he wants to start booking himself. What if we're just doing something where it's we're just a bunch of heels doing some bad shit and we're going after the beloved owner of the company? And, you know, what does it mean exactly? We're going to bring AEW back to what it was. What does that mean exactly? Does it mean that they're suddenly going to transform all, you know, take control and start booking matches? Look, if it turns into an evil authority angle, an evil authority figure angle, I'm going to be with you. I'll be the first guy sitting here saying this is shit. We've seen this before and it's derivative and I hate it, probably. But maybe it's not. And maybe this is just an angle. Maybe this is just a thing to properly establish that this new elite are going to be a force to be reckoned with. And that they are going to rewrite the rules or whatever. They're going to do their own thing. Because Matt and Nick, Matthew and Nicholas, are EVPs of the company. So they have some executive power. Right? It doesn't have to be a power play. It doesn't have to be something that becomes a question of, you know, control of AEW or whatever the fuck. It doesn't have to be. We don't need to have those types of goofy ass stakes. We could just be, you know, establishing the fact that these guys are going to, they're going to run roughshod. They're going to do their own thing. You know, an NWO-esque type of angle, but without the we're invading aspect. No, it's just like a bunch of guys who are going to take control, right? They're going to do things their own way. When you take a minute to, when you think about how, you know, when you think about it, it's very Bullet Club-like, where it's just like coming in and shaking the establishment, shaking the status quo. Now, maybe this is not a good example because for years, Bullet Club was reviled by New Japan fans because, you know, they were bringing Western sensibilities in interference and disqualifications and so on and so forth to the Japanese wrestling sphere that a lot of people were watching to escape the nonsense of North America. Now the nonsense of North America was coming there. So maybe it's not a good example. I think we look back at Bullet Club with a lot of nostalgia now, even though it's still going, but I'm talking about the really good years, the prime years of Bullet Club. I think we look back at it now with a lot more reverence. Whereas at the time it's, you know, it would split the fan base. Some of the fan base would love it. Some of it absolutely hated it. So I'm not ready to to get on here and throw my hat and say, oh, this is awful. This is going to be terrible. Because, you know, this has to be one of these situations where we have to let it play out, as Alexa Bliss once told us. We just have to. Because look at us 2 weeks ago, us definitely including myself, talking about the footage, right? And how bad of an idea it was and how not good it was. And yet, 2 weeks later, Jack Perry is super over. People are chanting, oh, cry me a river when he comes out. Maybe the footage, maybe the footage ended up working. Maybe this was the plan. Could it be that the footage turned out to be successful? I talked about it at the Windy City Riot review. When Jack Perry came out in front of the Chicago crowd and had monster heat. And I was like, well, I asked it right there. Look, if the footage worked out for one, it was good for one thing. If it does one thing successfully, and that is get Jack Perry over, then it probably was a good idea then. Maybe it did turn out to be successful if it wasn't just like a vanity thing where it was done to promote, to create, to elevate someone, and it turns out that person might just be Jack Perry. But so on that front, I feel I gotta give this some credit. I gotta wait to see how this develops before I sit here and I start slapping my table. My desk, this is not a table, it's a desk. What's the difference, you say? Well, a table, you sit down and you have a nice cozy meal on it. Maybe you'll have you'll sit down, you'll put, you know, you have a nice bowl of cereal in the morning with the paper. You read the morning paper. Does anyone still do that? You'll have a nice lunch. You have a nice BLT sandwich, you know, just waiting for you right there. And you eat it up with a nice glass of juice, you know, or some water. Then you sit down at the table and you do you do a puzzle. Don't do a puzzle. You do a puzzle, or you know, you play games with your friends, your children, significant. But a desk is work. You know, like a desk is where you sit down. You have your computer. You have your thing. You have your notes. You're doing work. You pay bills at the desk. You don't pay bills at the table. You know, that's the difference between a desk and a table. So this is not a table, it's a desk. I don't eat at the desk. I eat at a table. And I think it's important to keep that distinction, that separation at the same time. You can't do everything at a desk. You have to have this separation mentally where you're able to walk away, where you're like, this is my zone to do this, and there's my zone to do that. Here, I work. It's the workspace. And then when I walk out, it's leisure. It's something else. It's relaxation. It's, you know, it's food. It's self care. You know, I don't work in self care. You know, it doesn't work. I don't sit here and, you know, eat a steak as at the desk. I just don't. You don't do that. What are we talking about? The footage? Yeah. So I'm not gonna sit here and stomp on my desk telling you this is awful. Because I'm ready to give this a shot. I'm legitimately ready to give this a shot. Then, it might turn out to be great. It might turn out to be not that great. It might just suck. But I'm telling you, maybe the footage worked. Maybe we were all fooled. Maybe we all thought it was malarkey, but it turned out to be pristine stuff. Anyway, back to the 44 minutes. Christ. Let's go. We got the rest of the show to talk about now. The Young Bucks. No, we talked about this. Okay, so let's go back to the start of the show after the Young Bucks arrive and whatnot. Orange Cassidy, his music hits, but he gets thrown out of the backstage area by Trent Beretta. Kicks him down the stairs, gets him into the ring, calls out Chuck Taylor. Apologizes for not doing this months ago. He says he's sorry that the both of them spent 5 years hugging this narcissistic prick. He was supposed to be their mascot, but he took over and now he doesn't care. He's not a friend, and he wants to know where Chucky T lies. But Chucky T attacks him and says Trent, he always knew Trent was a piece of shit. So 5 years in, Chuck Taylor finally got to say shit on TV. I am so thrilled for him. Happy for him. Got to say shit on Turner Networks. Congratulations. Congratulations to Chucky T. Milestone moment. Like, put that in your hype reel, you know, moving forward for legendary moments in AEW history. And this sets up a fight, a parking lot fight. From what I understand, is pre-recorded. That will be airing on Rampage this week. Another 3-hour block of wrestling programming on Saturday. The 2-hour collision followed by Rampage. And they got a pretty good stacked collision to Collision and Rampage. Like, it's a good little 3 hours of wrestling we got going here. Anyway, we then move into Jon Moxley cutting a backstage promo, regarding his match against Powerhouse Hobbs later in the evening. That's fine. And then the very first appearance of Swerve Strickland as AEW World Champion appears in the guise of an AEW World Title Eliminator match as he defeated Kyle Fletcher, the Ring of Honor World Television Champion. They stalemate on this one with some grappling. Fletcher works the arm. Strickland back bodies him onto the floor. Michinoku driver by Fletcher. Double stomp on the apron by Swerve, but Swerve sort of jams his leg in kayfabe, of course. So, you know, he's getting hurt. House call is caught into an ankle lock by Fletcher. Rolling flatliner and a brainbuster by Swerve. Callis then gets up from the seated position and calls a play to Kyle Fletcher. He lifts up four fingers or whatever. And then Kyle goes to the outside, looks under the ring. But then he's like, nah, and he never minds. He disregards whatever play was being called. But that unfortunately leads to him losing the match. This was fine. This was a fine little match. I think I gave it... we're over here. Yeah, I gave it 3.25 star. Like, I think, you know, fine little TV match. Good first opening salvo for Swerve. A first opponent to give him a moment here to shine. Maybe it was fair to have some higher expectations work-wise for this match. Seeing that Fletcher usually goes out and tears the house down. There was no tearing of any house in this match. Like I said, fine match. I have didn't have a problem with it, but definitely didn't blow anyone's mind, especially definitely not mine. It's weird, right? I feel like I would have, considering that they were in Daly's place, and considering that they, with the stage setup, right? It's a smaller venue, and the stage setup, which is naturally more intimate, right? That that doesn't have the feel of the tunnels, you know, with the big screens and whatnot. I feel like I would have waited one more week before bringing Swerve out. You know, have him just like send in a promo or whatnot, you know, but just to have him come out and look like the biggest damn deal on earth on his first outing. I think, and again, don't get me wrong, I'm very pro Swerve. I love you guys and gals and non-binary pals. Y'all know this. I love Swerve, which is why I feel maybe they could have just like trotted him out at on a Dynamite stage, give him the fireworks, give him a little extra oomph. Now it's not, it wasn't to the heights that you kind of know we can hit with Strickland. Not terrible in any sense of the word, but I'm like, there was something missing here. There was something grandiose that I was looking for, that I was hoping for. And if next week, all they're doing with them is, announcing the next challenger at Double or Nothing, well, you definitely could have had him just come out next week. Like there was, I don't think there was all that much of a reason to rush him out. You know, I don't think there was a reason to rush him out, or at least have him come out, you know, have him cut a backstage promo, something, you know, a pre-tape, have him do something. But I would have kept his return for something a little more panache than what we got here. Then we get Renee Paquette backstage. She's talking with Thunder Rosa. Then Deonna Purrazzo arrives. They argue. A shoving match breaks out. Security breaks them up. And we have a match for Rampage set up between the two. So there you go. Back from commercial. You get a recap of Ospreay versus Danielson at Dynasty, which, you know, if you have not watched, you have to watch. I don't know what to tell you. That's what you do. Then Mina Sharikawa defeated Anna Jay. I thought this was an okay match, but I wouldn't call it good. Mina's a little sloppy. You know, and I don't know if this is maybe working with these Americans, these less well-traveled Americans like Anna Jay. But I can, you know, I don't know if that contributes here. But you know what? I can see Mina getting over with the AEW crowd. I really do. I'm still, honestly, I'm a little surprised she's still around. I thought she would have just buggered off back to Japan after WrestleMania week, but she stuck around a little more and she's still here. So clearly they have plans for her in AEW, and that's good. That's fine. Like, I think with, you know, proper motivation and an opponent that can keep up, I think Mina has a lot to give for a viewing audience, a North American viewing audience, you know. I think she's already over with a segment of the base. And I think it can grow from that. You know, I think the more she shows up on TV, the more people get to know her routine, her presentation, what she does. I think she has a legitimate chance to get over very easily with the AEW crowd. There you go. She wins the match with that dope little pin combo. What did they say? She called it the Glorious Collection. That's a good little combo. After the match, Mariah May has the champagne, but Anna Jay runs in and chokes out Mariah with the Queen Slayer until Toni Storm makes the save. And then Serena Deeb comes out and we can't hear a thing she's saying because audio was shit. Now, I know if you were watching it on Fight, congratulations. Here's a back pat for you. Good for you. But for the rest of us, yeah, clearly, us in Canada on TSN2, we get the TBS feed because the audio last night was terrible. You got the arena echo in most of the stuff that they were talking about. And then Serena Deeb, you couldn't make out what she was saying at all. And commentary was drowned out at some moments. It was just bad. It was just bad, 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 bad. Then we get the championship celebration for Willow Nightingale, as Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander are there to introduce Willow. They got Caprice Coleman on commentary, and Chris Statlander says that they're there to give Nightingale her flowers, and Caprice Coleman sort of sings along to Willow's theme. Okay, that's fine. That's all right. So she hits the ring. Stokely admits that he didn't like Willow initially. Willow says the feeling's mutual, pal. And she says she earned the title and she's proud of herself. Because Jacksonville was where in the spring of 2020 she was in the front row, you know, doing the front row stuff when they have indie guys and gals come in to sort of slap the barricades during matches. Then in 2022, it was in this ring when she got signed, and now she stands not as a rookie, but as the face of TBS. Mercedes Moné, of course, comes out, and Willow tells her to get over it because you keep interrupting every time I'm in the ring, right? And Moné is like, no, I'm just here to congratulate you and remind you to enjoy it while it lasts because I'm winning the title at Double or Nothing. To some boos from the crowd, and I'm like, oh, finally, are we starting to turn Mercedes into a heel like she should be? She should be a heel. So probably a little nudge here. Nightingale then, Moné wants to know if Nightingale attacked her, you know, in the dark, that goofy shit. It's Alex Marvez. I don't know why. It's Marvez. I don't know why everyone is still wondering who it could be. It was Alex Marvez. He was right there when the lights went out, and he just bonked her on the head with whatever the fuck, you know, his shoe. Maybe he has an attaché case. Maybe he has one of those. And he just blomped her across the head with it. Like, it doesn't matter. It's whatever. However he did it, it's Alex Marvez. Case. I thought this case was closed. So she wants to know if it's Nightingale, and then she accuses that maybe it's Statlander, and Hathaway says, oh, you know, maybe it was Julia Hart. But Nightingale then asks if she really thinks that Moné really thinks that she intentionally wanted to hurt her at their match in Japan, and Mercedes says she doesn't want the truth. That she says Willow doesn't want the truth. She just wants to feel better about what she did. Willow feels genuinely awful. She says she's had a lot of doubts and questions from that night on. You know, doubts for herself, from fans, from the locker room. But now she's TBS champion, and there's no doubt in that situation at all. Moné says in her heart, Willow knows she can't beat her. She goes to leave. Statlander grabs her hand. But Mercedes then attacks, slaps Nightingale across the face, and then it's all a schmoz that has to be broken up. So I thought this was a good segment. I thought this was well done. And this and we got our first match announced for Double or Nothing too. But I thought this was a very good segment and a very good showing by Moné, who just seemed natural, normal, you know, didn't speak in that robotic cadence that she has. And no, we were closer to that initial promo that she had in Boston about a month ago, where she was speaking from the heart and it flowed and felt natural. It's kind of the same thing here. It's kind of the same thing here where now she's in her element. She's, you know, she's facing off on someone that they're trading jabs. This was well done. I'm not saying it's the greatest promo segment of all time, but this was good. And I enjoyed it. And I thought it was well done. And And we're already setting the stage for the next couple of weeks in the buildup to Double or Nothing. Because Double or Nothing, let's double check. Double or Nothing 2024 is, it's going to be here. It's going to be landing on us sooner than later. Look, May 26th. We've got a month. We got 4 weeks of build to this. So this is why I was saying at the start of the show where it's like at the start of the of our review is that I kind of appreciate them setting up these things so quickly, so earnestly, instead of just dragging along. Now we're laying in, we're getting in quickly with some match, with some feuds that might turn into matches, probably turn into matches at Double or Nothing. So there we go. So that was that segment. Then we get the Alex Marvez with the Elite stuff that we already talked about. We get a recap of Jack Perry's, his appearance in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Not a lot of footage, just mostly the footage of when he initially showed up and tore his contract. I think that was the important part that needed to get over for AEW fans. Then we had the AEW International Title Number One Contendership Casino Gauntlet match. Interesting little concept here. It's like a Royal Rumble, but you don't have to eliminate everyone. It's still like, you know, we don't know how many people are in this, and we're going to keep adding dudes until someone gets a pinfall or a submission. I'm like, oh, that's pretty fun. You know, so you're not waiting for 30 people. You're not waiting for 10 people, 12 people, and then you have to eliminate everyone. No, it's like we keep going. We keep adding dudes until someone just like wins the match. And I'm like, okay, I didn't hate this. Good little concept. And in this match, look, Will Ospreay got in this match to the surprise of many. He defeated Dante Martin, Jay Lethal, Jay White, Commander, Kyle O'Reilly, Lance Archer, and Penta El Zero Miedo to become the number one contender for the international title. So, yeah, look, I enjoyed this. It's kind of like a scramble. I don't know. You know, there's that part of it too where it's kind of like a scramble, but it becomes more and more scrambly as you go along. Like, at least at first you don't have all the schmas. You just have two people, then three, then four. I thought it was a fine little setup here. I guess I would always prefer if they built contenders to championship titles as opposed to just like doing battle royals or, you know, casino gauntlet matches or whatever the fuck. And then having a number one straight out of the way, right? Like, you have the ratings. You have the rankings is what I mean. You have the rankings. This is why we have rankings. It's to avoid doing this kind of bullshit, right? Is it just me? Probably is just me. But it's one of these things that I find annoying with booking, and not just in WWE, in AEW, but in WWE as well. Look, on Monday they did a battle royal to determine the next women's world champion. I'm like, can't you do anything else? Instead of throwing a bunch of people into a 20-minute match? No. You could do so much. You could do something else, you know? It's not as if you don't have guys who could be ready for those spots, to challenge for those spots, right? Anyway, it's very weird to me. But basically what this does is that it set up another match for Double or Nothing. Roderick Strong will be facing Will Ospreay, which, again, is tremendous and continues going to my point that I've been hammering home for weeks. When Will Ospreay signed and people got excited, they're like, oh, wow, we're going to get Ospreay and Okada. We're going to get Ospreay and Omega. All matches we've seen before in one shape or another. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm saying that I've been excited for the matches that I've been excited for the matches that we've never seen out of Ospreay and his journey, right? Like the Danielson match. But that, of course, when Ospreay signed, that was the match everyone was excited about. And we got it. And thank the Lords. Lords? We did. And And you know, like, and then I look at Will Ospreay versus Kyle O'Reilly, and I'm like, this rocks. Like, this is something I want to see now. Now I want to see these guys go 15 minutes, right? Because the little exchanges they had going there was like, oh shit, Kyle O'Reilly went to the barber. By the way, I don't know. He went to the barber, had a little trim. Got a little trimmed off the sides there. Got rid of them sideburns, hippie. But yeah, no, it legitimately was tremendous to see that. You know, and they tease Will Ospreay and Commander. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, yeah. And look, you got Will Ospreay and Jay White standing off, across from each other, and it got a pop from the crowd. People know what was up here. People are into Jay White. You know, Jay White is doing so much despite the fact that he's squared away on the mid card. He's been doing so much and keeping himself over. Don't get me wrong. At the same time, super protected in the company, but he's been doing so much with so little. And people still remember how great Jay White was. They still know there's a history between him and Jay White. That was tremendous. That's something I know. I know they're backstage. They noticed. Anyway, so we already got that going. And after the match, the Undisputed Kingdom come out to do the face-to-face. Get that train rolling. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Then we have the Chris Jericho segment, who is now known as The Learning Tree. And for those of you who are wondering, yes, his theme song is a Fozzy song. I don't know which one it is. I don't care. I think Fozzy kind of stinks. I don't listen to Fozzy. Do you listen to Fozzy? Do you buy albums? No one buys albums anymore. Do you stream Fozzy on a regular basis, on the reg, as they say? Do you do that? No one does. Everyone knows Judas because it's a wrestling thing and it's a halfway decent song. It's fine. But he gets on the mic and he tells it's the FTW. He's the FTW champion, and now it no longer means whatever it meant, because now it stands for the world, because he did it for all of us, and he added his nameplate on the top, right? On top of the title, where there's no place for a nameplate. That's never been, the Learning Tree, Chris Jericho. He says he's doing God's work, and when he means God, he means Terry Funk's work, who passed the torch to him. He says, go work with the young guys. And he puts Hook over, and he says the only flaw is that he needs to take lessons from him and dump the clowns like Katsuyori Shibata and Taz. Then suddenly, Big Bill arrives, and he says he's been in the back listening, and and he needs the guidance of the Learning Tree. And Jericho says he's been watching him for a long time, and he's one of the reasons he's in AEW, so he's going to keep an eye on him, because if what he says is true, then he'll be excited to help him out. And Big Bill says, okay, then you watch me then. Look, I know how you all feel about Chris Jericho, or at least 90% of you feel about Chris Jericho. But you can never leave this man in doubt. This is there's a lot of elements to his personality, to his character. There's rumors that people really don't adhere to, and that's fine. And that's enough for them to just make them flip the channel. And I get that, okay? But if we're talking, let's try to compartmentalize a little bit here. Every time Chris Jericho has been in AEW and people started to say, he's washed, He's done. Get him off my TV. He's annoying. He's boring. So on and so forth. Suddenly, he comes back. He reignites himself with something else that works. And that suddenly you're like, you know what? This isn't bad. Because this was not bad. This was not bad in any sense of the word. And by the way, he used the term Jericho Vortex. Straight up. Like, he knows the discussions. He knows people that these things exist. He's probably watched my video that I did made with Joe Lanza here on the podcast a couple of months ago. You should check it out. It's called Jericho Vortex, Myth or Real, where we break down all of his feuds and see, you know, who's been better off, right? Because that's the whole nugget of it. So now, like, this disingenuous mentor type, you know, and he comes out and he waves to everyone. He's smiling. He's acting like one of these self-help gurus, you know, without really leaning into it too hard. And I think that is tremendous. I think that's amazing. And it works to Jericho. Jericho, babyface, stinks. It's not his strength. It really isn't. And he's been babyface before in his career, and he's had, you know, semi-successful runs. He's had some good runs, but he is always at his best as a heel. But just like last time, when people start saying he's getting fat, you remember that time when he flubbed the lion salt? You remember that one? And everyone said, "Oh, he's washed. He's done. Hit the bricks, pal. You're done." Well, he leans down, gets into great shape, and he comes back and he continues to be a center of attention. He even does the lion salt and references it, you know, waves to the crowd or whatever the fuck. I don't remember exactly what he did, but he made sure everyone knew, like, "Hey, look, I can still land my move." I honestly don't know what the issue overall is with that's not true. I do know why people don't like Chris Jericho. But I see this. I see him coming on TV. And you know, people say, "What kind of blackmail does he have on Tony Khan to always be on TV?" Chris Jericho is one of the most recognizable faces in professional wrestling. Of course you're going to put this guy on TV all the time. What are you talking about? And then the people that he feuds with, that he's involved with, then they get TV time. Then they're on TV more often. And if Jericho, this is what I'm thinking with the Big Bill stuff. If Jericho, instead of building a stable, just decides to go with the heater, just him and Big Bill, one next to each other, and just going for it, I think that's great. And it's going to benefit Big Bill tremendously. I'm a big Bill fan. Got that out. I'm a big Bill fan. I think he's tremendous. I think he's a fantastic big man. Do you not think he's not going to benefit from hanging around Chris Jericho on TV all the time? It's going to be the most exposure he'll have ever got in his career. And my opinion, I think he deserves to be more on TV. He needs to be showcased more. And then it's Chris Jericho with the fucking FTW title. It's a mid-card title. It's a lower mid-card thing. Like, Jericho's not even at the top of the card. I don't even know why people are so mad. Plus, he loses all the time. This was Chris Jericho's first win. We're going to check this out together in months. His match, his win at Double or Nothing is what I'm trying to say. Not at Double or Nothing, at Dynasty. Well, and we're talking singles match, right? His last win was against Titan in March. Okay? Which is a match that I had relegated to memory. And then before that, Atlantis Jr., which, again, I had relegated to memory. These are guys who don't even go here, you know? Otherwise, He defeated Kyle Fletcher in January. He never wins. He loses most of the time. Because then after that, look, he lost to Takeshita. He lost the eight-man scramble for the world title shot at Revolution. He lost to Hook. And then even in the in his tag team, right? The whole Katsuyori Shibata thing, you know, on Dynamite 2 weeks ago. Anyway, he should be winning more, because I don't even think that beating Chris Jericho is that meaningful anymore, because he's lost so much. I don't even think it has the same amount of sheen it once had. The point being here is that he's a value. He's a consistent commodity. I think as a heel, he's going to be tremendous. I like this stuff. I like what he's doing, because he comes across as a scumbag, as a sleazeball. There you go. That's the word it was. A sleazeball. And Jericho excels in that role. Take it for what you want, but he does. So, look, my hope here is that Jericho doesn't assemble a group of wrestlers. Not an Inner Circle version 3. Not a JAS version 2. Him and the heater together. That would be absolutely fantastic. Renee Paquette is backstage. She's interviewing Will Ospreay. Also there is Don Callis and Kyle Fletcher. Callis, of course, puts Will over, says he wished he would have hit the Tiger Driver. Ospreay says, you know, nope, I'm not going to do it. Not after what happened with Danielson. I don't want to hit that move anymore, because he did hesitate during the match. I forgot to mention that during the gauntlet match. He did hesitate. That's the story they're telling here, right? This dangerous move, this terribly, you know, injury, scary moment move. Why wasn't Daniel sent on TV? Because he's selling the fucking injury. I mean, these are workers. What do you want? Anyway. Callis says says Ospreay shouldn't care about how many broken necks Danielson has had. I thought that line was funny. Fletcher tries to defend Will, saying he won the match regardless. And Callis sort of snaps at him and says, you, sir, are in no position to talk about winning matches tonight. And little dissent. So there's there's the dissension thing going on with the Don Callis family. When he was on commentary earlier, he was talking about, I'm always looking to expand. They made a point that, you know, he might be looking to expand the family, so might be including other people. There you go. Don Callis, Don Callis also mentions that Roderick Strong has had a broken neck, and Will shouldn't be afraid to go after it, you know. And when you think about it, I'm just saying here, you know, the Hidden Blade, technically, right, in its concept, you're hitting a guy in the back of the head, like, that's neck trauma, you know, coming in full force on the back of the head, you know, upper neck. Between that and the Tiger Driver 91, I don't know what's worse. I'm just putting that out there. Like, kayfabe speaking, of course. This leads us to the IWGP World Heavyweight title match, where Jon Moxley successfully retained against Powerhouse Hobbs. Quite frankly, there's not much to talk about here. I don't think this was very good. Even before the apparent injury that Hobbs got apparently doing a spot off the, what was it? Sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. Yeah, slipping on the corner splash, right? I have a feeling they went home early on this one. You know, but even before we got to that point, I didn't think this was anything real special. And as the first defense of the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, I'm a little perplexed. I was perplexed when this was set up. I'm still perplexed now. I don't know how to feel about it. But it's just strange all around. It kind of came across as a nothing match. It's a 10-minute match. Maybe not. This was maybe a low point in the show, which is weird because we were gearing up for the main event. And yeah, like I said, maybe once Hobbs hurt himself, this really undercut the match. But you know, whatever we got up until that point, regardless, wasn't really spectacular. I don't know how. This is not the place for this conversation either, because it's an AEW Dynamite review show, but you gotta wonder what the plan is for the World Heavyweight Championship, the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, because if Mox is defending here against Powerhouse Hobbs, and then he's going to be defending against Ren Narita over in Japan at the Dontaku. What are we even doing? You know what I mean? Like, it's very strange. Like, it does feel like Mox is about to drop it to someone else. Like, and what was the what ultimately was the plan? If we're just getting, very junior defenses out of this title reign, right? Again, I'm not going to complain that they're doing something with a member of the Rey with the three Musketeers over in New Japan with Ren Narita, but if the plan is to circle back to Dominion in 2 months or so, if the plan is to circle back to Dominion against Tetsuya Naito, again, so Tetsuya Naito can get his title back, what was the point? What was the point of John Moxley getting the title? Did Naito need some time off? Maybe. But then again, he's going to be fucking wrestling fucking Jake Lee. Again, I'm not getting into this. Like, this is New Japan stuff. But it's like, I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on. New Japan, I've said in multiple times on record, it's my favorite wrestling promotion. I don't know what they're doing right now. I really don't. Yeah, it's a very odd scenario for me, and I feel like I'm coasting on hope. And the last promotion that I was coasting on hope was WWE, and I ended up just dumping it all together because I was like, okay, this promotion is never going to change. I'm hoping that it's not the case. I'm hoping we're just in a weird spot right now with New Japan and that it's not systemic of something more problematic. Anyway, don't have much to say about this match. Didn't think it was great. It's unfortunate that Hobbs got hurt. As it stands, I'm not quite sure I'm not quite sure what the extent of the injury is. Yeah. Let's see what happens. And then Rene Paquette had a segment with Shibata using his translator machine, saying that he's going to challenge Chris Jericho to an FTW championship in Manitoba next week. And he says that the rhinestones in the shape of a heart are fun. Tell me RJ City isn't writing these segments. Tell me RJ City is not writing these Shibata Rene Paquette segments. Tell me he's not. Did you tell me that he's not? Because I don't believe you. Then we have the main event segment, which we already covered. Look, fun show. Lots of stuff happening. very newsworthy, establishing a lot of angles. It feels like we're... This show did not feel stagnant. Felt like shit was happening. And I can... And good. Well done on top of it all. So I can excuse then not having, you know, 4-star matches on the show. No 4-star matches on the show, for instance. I enjoyed it. Fun times. I hope you enjoyed this review as well. We're going to wrap it up. Send you on your merry way. I will be back on Tuesday for another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Hope you're there because it's a good time. And I enjoy having you there as well. So one more pitch for a like, a subscription here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on your favorite podcast application, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star rating on Spotify. I hope you all have a great rest of your week, and I will see you next time.